Finally, it's over. Gilgamesh orders a magnificent votive statue of Enkidu. He goes through all the necessary rituals to ensure that the gods of the underworld will welcome him and help him to be peaceful and not sick at heart. But the ritual gestures, though meticulous, seem desperate. At best, Enkidu will be one of those miserable, dirt-eating human birds who squat or shuffle in utter darkness forever. This is poor comfort. So, abandoning all his privileges and responsibilities, giving up his roles as warrior and king, reversing Enkidu's journey from wilderness to civilization, Gilgamesh puts on an animal skin and leaves Uruk. His departure is reminiscent of another royal departure 1,000 years later, of the Buddha. Like Gilgamesh, Gautama, the future awakened one, is transfixed by a vision of human vulnerability and feels compelled to leave his palace and all his possessions behind, so that he can search for the secret of life and death. Gautama's grief is not personal, though. He hasn't lost a beloved friend. He hasn't lost anyone except himself, his own identity. When, for the first time in his sheltered life, he sees sickness, old age, and death, his whole idea of what it is to be human, what it is that someday awaits him, collapses, and he is plunged into a desperate questioning. His story has a happier ending than Gilgamesh's. After 6 years of futile austerities, he sits down under the Bodhi tree, determined not to move until either death or understanding comes. And at dawn, when the morning star appears, suddenly he wakes up from the dream of suffering. "When you see the unborn, uncreated, unconditioned," he later said, "you are liberated from everything born, created, and conditioned." Gilgamesh, too, asks an all-consuming question about life and death, but his question is not driven by a deep need for understanding. It is driven by fear. Rilke called Gilgamesh the epic of the fear of death. Fear is the reverse side of the cool warrior ethos, in which the consciousness of mortality motivates the hero to establish his fame. "Our days are few in number," Gilgamesh had said imperturbably. "Why be afraid, then, since sooner or later death must come?" Why, indeed, except that terror comes unbidden, on the way to monsters or in the presence of overwhelming loss. Love has changed everything. It has made Gilgamesh absolutely vulnerable. His earlier consciousness of mortality turns out to be a pale, abstract thing in comparison with the anguish he feels as he roams through the wilderness. "Must I die too? Must I be as lifeless as Enkidu? How can I bear this sorrow that gnaws at my belly, this fear of death that restlessly drives me onward? If only I could find the one man whom the gods made immortal, I would ask him how to overcome death." In his previous heroic mode, Gilgamesh thought he knew that only the gods live forever. Now, terrified, he is no longer certain. His first question, "Must I die too?" is not rhetorical. He really doesn't know the answer anymore. It is the question of a child at the threshold of adult awareness, who for the first time is faced with the concept of dying. Every child, to become an adult, must realize that the answer to that question is yes. Once he has passed through the gate of "I will die," he can later, if his questioning goes deep enough, pass through the gate of "I was never born."